Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Happy Wednesday to you. It is your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an amazing show for you today. We are going to jump from subject to subject to subject, and that's one of the things I love. That's why I love bringing together great people, because we're going to talk about weddings. We're going to talk about divorces. We're going to talk about appliances. We're going to talk about cancer. We're going to talk about marketing. We're going to talk about advertising, so much, right? But before we start talking about all these different topics and bringing in our experts, I need to ask you to do what I always ask you to do. And that means I need you to be an advocate for the Roundtable Talk Show. I need you to go in there with your roommate who is sleeping peacefully, dreaming about their life and about their visions for a new day. Wake them up. Tell them. The Roundtable Talk Show is on. I need you to call your granddad, go visit your friends, your cousins. People are missing the Roundtable Talk Show, and they're missing it because you haven't mentioned it to them. So I need you to go ahead and share the show, because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're sharing and you're grabbing your notepad, I'm going to do what I came here to do this morning, and I'm going to go ahead and introduce my first guest. You may recognize his face, you may recognize his name, you may even recognize his coffee mug. He has been here with us before, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about his companies, his history. Mr. Jim Esteele, CEO of Danby Appliances and Shipperbee. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Morning, Sharifa. I'm great. How are you today?
I am excellent. I'm excited to have you here again. You were a lot of fun the last time you were here. I see your hair's grown a little bit.
Well, we have this thing, a pandemic here, and you're not supposed to get your hair cut, you see, so.
Well, you can see I'm not a law-abiding citizen, because I just got my hair done yesterday. It was fun when you were here the last time. One of the things that I like about you, Jim, is that you are not the typical CEO, in my opinion. You focus more on the people. We discussed your board, ways that you were expanding, your growth, how you started your companies. Please share with us your story on how you started as an entrepreneur, Jim.
So I was an engineering student and I needed a computer, got a better deal if I bought two of them. So I bought two and sold one and then sold another. And next thing you know, I'm buying and selling computers. And I built that business to a couple billion dollars in sales. And I did what all entrepreneurs think they should do. I sold my business for a lot of money and I retired. And then I was doing some board work, advising, stuff like that, consulting. And then I sat on the board of Danby Appliances. The CEO resigned and I said, oh, I can run that. So I came and started running. I said, I like operating a business. Danby Appliances makes bar fridges, freezers, wine coolers. We make about 2 million appliances a year. We do about 400 million in sales. And that was going to be my next decade. And then the ownership group said they wanted me to sell the company. And I said, how much for? They told me, I said, okay, I'll take the company. So that's how I ended up in the appliance business, owning an appliance company. And that could be why you don't think I'm a typical CEO. When I started my first business, I did what I thought. I was retired and thought, I don't want to be retired. Now I do what I want to do, which is why I'm on the show again, you see, because I do what I want to do, right?
What are some of the things that you want to do as a CEO, Jim?
Well, if you're talking altruistically, I want to use business and a company to do good. So that's my sole purpose in life, is to use the business to do good. And that's why I started Shipperbee, which is a courier company that saves 73% of the greenhouse gas per parcel shipped. So that's really what I want to do. And I do want to have a good, fun company to work for. I think it's meaningful for people to have meaningful work. I will say COVID sure changes things. I mean, I used to be a walk around type person. I would walk through the factory and shake hands with everybody just to go to the car, just because it was, that was a way I connected with people. And now I'm working home and it's like kind of weird. I eat my lunch in the lunchroom because that's how I learn things. And now I eat my lunch on my own. It's kind of lonely.
Well, that's why I'm here, Jim. I'm good. Here for you. Okay, we have our own virtual lunchroom. Awesome. Now, I saw that you were scheduled because I always follow you, especially on LinkedIn and all your posts. And I'm so excited for what you're doing. But when I've been seeing all the hubbub in the news about the U.S. Postal Service, I wanted to know, what are your thoughts? Because to me, I feel like this could be an opportunity for companies such as yours.
Well, I mean, ShipperBee is a courier, and companies like ShipperBee or FedEx or UPS could do mail. Unfortunately, I don't do politics, and I'm not even in the United States. As you know, I'm in Canada. I just hope that everything gets worked out, especially around elections and stuff like that. It doesn't seem right to have disruptions. But the gist of it in parcel shipping is through the roof. Everybody's shopping at home, Amazon.com, and there's not enough capacity to handle the parcels. Mm-hmm. So it is a golden time to be in the parcel delivery business. For us, it's an issue of scaling at the right pace. Mm-hmm. You don't want to scale too fast, because when you start a business, you need all 5-star reviews. You can't have 1-star reviews. You need all 5-star. And so you need to essentially grow at a slow enough rate that you can do that. Slow enough for ShipperBee is about 20% per month, which isn't, mm-hmm. doesn't sound fast, but you take 20% and add 20% and you do that for a year. It is reasonably high growth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, not on a political aspect, but I was just wondering because one of the things that happened to me personally is a couple of weeks ago, someone sent me a check. And it was funny because she just was like, Sharifa, I want to support you. I love what you're doing. I don't use other means. I want to put a check in the mail to you. Is that okay? And I was like, sure, I'm not going to turn down a check in the mail. And 10 days later, I had not received this lady's check. So of course I'm like, oh yeah, the old check in the mail trick, right? And so when I finally get it and I call her, she's like, that's weird because I put it in the mail the same day. So I saw a meme that said the postal service, you know, whoever it is, I know you're in Canada, but it's going to affect small businesses so much more than anyone else. So I think people are going to start, you know, sending their checks or sending whatever they have to do through courier services as opposed to the post office. Those were my thoughts, but I'm going to come back to you, Jim. I want to introduce our next guest who has tons of personality, and he's going to talk to us about being an authority on marketing within the wedding industry. Good morning, Mr. Brian Lawrence. How are you?
Good morning. The wedding industry is definitely a real challenged industry right now. Of course, it's different depending on parts of the country, but here in New York and New Jersey, where we have some of the top venues in the world, there's no weddings taking place. And there's very few. And there's been so many cancellations and postponements. And there's so much frustration among, you know, as far as the wedding couples that just understand that this is their dream and it's being delayed or shattered. And they don't understand what's going on from the business aspect of all of these venues that have collected money for a particular wedding, and they don't want to take advantage of the client, but they've collected this money. It's not their fault that the wedding date is not going to take place. So they're trying to postpone, get them to reschedule the wedding to a time in the future where hopefully things will be back to normal. But they're trying to steer them to certain dates that may not be the most desirable dates, because otherwise then they're losing the revenue of a prime date. So there's a lot of challenges going on in the industry. And I was in Las Vegas at a trade show called Cater Source on March 13th. And that night was the night that I heard on the radio that on television that the NBA is being closed. That's it. Basketball is over. And then I knew that anything could happen. So I hightailed myself out of Vegas and got back home, and pretty much haven't left since then for the last 5 months. But I do web design and marketing for the wedding industry, and I'm also a speaker. I speak at all the major wedding industry conferences, and I didn't know what to expect. I knew that the wedding industry itself would certainly be majorly impacted, and it has. But, and so many of the proposals that I had that people were in the process of accepting just went away, and it was just a quiet. So I just figured, you know what, I'm going to roll up my sleeves and just give, you know, just do all these different types of webinars where I could just like help people to make use of their time. I mean, even though it's frustrating for a lot of these businesses to not have the actual weddings to take place, it's an amazing opportunity for them to have bandwidth to think about their future. So I gave a lot of ideas on how to take improving your website into your own hands, your search engine optimization. Because a lot of people that have a website that is outdated, they know they need a new website, but it's either they feel, well, if I can't get a new website, well, I'm just going to leave it alone. But that's the wrong approach. There's always things that you can do to improve your website, even if it's something subtle. You know, some people don't even have the areas that they serve. They don't have the contact information on the homepage. People have to search. So I did a lot of educating in that area. But surprisingly enough, since like the beginning of April, I've never been busier. Because so many people in my industry realize that like they just have so much excess energy that they're not expending in their day-to-day of the planning of the weddings and the producing of the weddings, that they want to do something positive. So it's been amazing how busy I've been. I never thought that would be the case. But and it's amazing what like Google, you know, Google has taken a lot of, they've tried to do what they thought was their part in this crisis, the COVID crisis. For example, for many months, they wouldn't allow people to leave reviews, so that because this situation with no fault of the business creates a lot of disgruntled customers. So they wanted to respect the reputation of people that have profiles on Google. And the other thing, but another thing that they did is they marked a ton of non-essential businesses across the country in so many different categories temporarily closed. And to this day, I could look at wedding venues across the country on their Google My Business profile, and it'll be marked closed because how many people go onto their own profile to search for themselves? So I've been trying to help people, to tell people, hey guys, go mark your business open. Maybe you're not able to do weddings right now, but the public needs to know that you're still available to plan weddings for the future.
That's excellent. We have a question for you, Brian, from our audience. Allison Allman, the organization Maven, would like to know, are micro weddings happening in New York City?
In New York City, there's starting to be talk of it. It's really interesting that you mentioned micro weddings. I have a client in Southern California. Her name is Kathy Ransom, and she owns two venues, Los Willows and Paradise Falls in the San Diego area. And based on COVID, she was forced to close one of those venues. I mean, she totally took the high road. She gave them the money back on any person that didn't want to go forward to change over to the other venue. But she came up with this immediate idea that she just, without like in 2 weeks, she said, Brian, I want to do something different. And I helped her develop a site called theminiwedding.com that is all about the micro wedding of being able to have, say, a really nice ceremony and some of the elements of a wedding in just a few hours with less people and being socially distanced. So according to a study done by the leading wedding industry platform, Wedding Wire and The Knot, about 55% of all of the wedding couples that are postponing are looking to do a mini or micro wedding for the time being. It might be the type of thing where they have that small wedding now, but they still have that dream of having that big lavish reception at some time in the future, but they don't want to put their life on hold.
Right. I think that's where we all are as a people at this point. It's like there's a feeling like we want to get back to life. We want some normalcy. We want to get back to the way things were, even though we understand that we will never, ever get go back to exactly how they are. We just want our lives back. I want to come back to you, Brian, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, who definitely has the experience and knowledge to discuss the topic on advertising and marketing. Is Lynn Power, who has 30 years of advertising experience, and she's the founder of Masami. Good morning, Lynn. How are you?
I am great. Thank you. Every time somebody says 30 years, I cringe because I don't feel that old. But in
you don't
my
look
head,
that old.
Thank you.
No, wouldn't have mentioned it if you hadn't mentioned it. It's one of those things.
I know.
You never put a lady's age or age range out there. But I was like, wow. But I'm the same way. I built my first website in 1994. So, you know, I've been doing this for 30 years.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
But it feels like, wow. We were talking about with Brian and some of his advertising challenges. What are some of the things that you're seeing in advertising and marketing with your clients?
Well, I left the industry about 2 years ago. I was the CEO of J. Walter Thompson New York, which is a very large, what would be considered a legacy agency. Mm-hmm. It no longer exists, which is really sad to me because it was the oldest ad agency in the world. One of the largest, about $2 billion. I left really because I wasn't loving what I was doing so much anymore, because I had you know, I was running an office. I was actually dealing with a very public Me Too situation. Mm-hmm. I just realized I wanted to get back to doing what I love, which was building brands. So I left to start my own company. But I think the advertising industry right now is super challenged because it's almost become this shoemakers, cobblers, kids have no shoes kind of situation. You know, where you do a lot of work for your clients on branding and positioning and narrative and strategy and content, but you don't really do it for yourself. So agencies don't really train people so much anymore. Clients are just as demanding as ever. You have to do more with less, you know. So the agency world is definitely going through, you know, a pretty seismic shift in terms of resetting really the whole system, you know, and figuring out how to recalibrate. And I think a big trend in advertising marketing is, of course, personalization and data. And, you know, the idea of creativity looking different now. I think a lot of people feel they can be creative and just make their own stuff and don't really need the expertise of, you know, a creative agency so much. And I'm guilty of that with my own business, you know, because I have an app that I use called Video Leap, and I'm not a creative person. I was always a business person in the creative industry, but I love this app because it's a video editing app. And I have just like made tons of videos on my iPhone, edited them right on Video Leap, and we'll post them on YouTube. And it cost me nothing, you know? So I think the days of, you know, paying loads of money to expensive agencies are kind of gone.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I definitely agree. But one of the things that I've seen recently, and I want your opinion on it, is the messaging. I've seen companies go from hardcore sales, buy now, get this, click here, to we are here to serve you. We are here for you. The whole message, the whole tone has changed. I mean, would you agree or disagree? Have you seen that?
I've seen companies do it well and have empathy and try to sort of recalibrate their messaging while all this stuff is going on. So for sure. But I've also seen the tone deaf ones that don't get it and that continue to, you know, plug away at their, you know, 25% off, you know, deals and stuff like that. I mean, for us also, we launched in February, right before mm-hmm. COVID. We launched at New York Fashion Week. Yeah. So, you know, we were in New York in a little room with Fashion Week, with everyone jammed together. And then only a few weeks later, it was like quarantine time. So even for our own little business, we rejiggered our messaging to be much more about self-care mm-hmm. and really emphasizing the clean beauty aspect, which people care more about now than ever, because they're just thinking more about, you know, what's in and on their what's in their products, what are they putting in and on their body. And so yes, I think you're right. I think the companies that will succeed in the long term are the ones that really understand empathy. Mm-hmm. I think that's becoming sort of a critical pillar for business.
Mm. I think it's a critical pillar for, I think, all of us as a people. One of the things that we focused on that we may not have focused on before is our health, is our families. Those are the things that became more important. Whereas before, we may have been more business oriented, more business driven. We were more focused on the outside world. I got to get to work. I have a commute. These are the things but now it's like, okay, let me focus on me. Let me focus on my family. And I want to come back to you, Lynn, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, who is an expert on these areas, Sylvia Beljanski, who started her career after being inspired by her father, but she's in cancer research at Beljanski Foundation. Good morning, Sylvia. How are you?
Good morning, and thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here with you. And I thank you this a wonderful opportunity to meet you as a guest. And it's fascinating because indeed we are all related by being business people. And that's great because we all have different experience from COVID and the crisis we are all going through. It's the same crisis, but the outlook is always different. And that's very interesting.
Yes. Well, thank you for being here. I love your backdrop. I love your pearls, love your smile. I just wanted to learn from you. You were inspired by your father, correct?
Correct. Yes. I am, but my background is a French attorney. I came to New York in the 90s as a foreign legal associate to work in a New York law firm. When you are French, it's something that you cannot, turn down the opportunity to come to New York to work in a law firm. And I was working in this law firm when I learned that both of my parents had been arrested by the French government because it turned out that my father was a biologist who had been working at the Pasteur Institute in Paris, France for all of his career. And in the 90s, he helped former French President François Mitterrand to finish his second term. Mitterrand was diagnosed with advanced prostate cancer. The official surgeon that came to the equivalent of the French White House, the Élysée, opened, did surgery and said the president is not going to finish his second term. The cancer has spread everywhere. But Mitterrand, because it's a French story, Mitterrand had a mistress, and the mistress knew about a good doctor who had very good results on prostate cancer because he was using my father's products. Mm-hmm. And Mitterrand finished his second term. But that was giving to holistic approach to cancer, mm-hmm. a kind of official recognition. And the fact that natural products could do better than what official medicine at the prognosis they had made was something they just could not stand. So exactly 9 months after Mitterrand finally passed away, after having finished his second term, they sent a SWAT team, the French army, to destroy him and the laboratory. And I was sitting, in my low.
I want to interrupt, Sylvia, only because I want to make sure that I understand what you're saying correctly. So if I understood what you said, they wanted to destroy the laboratory because he had helped him with his cancer. So they were against the cancer research?
Absolutely.
What
I discovered, because my first thing was, of course, to take care of my parents and being on the legal team and organize a legal defense. And what I discovered in the legal file was an order to destroy every evidence. And wow. I did not have, any scientific background, but I said, this is not something that should be allowed. Justice is about bringing people to justice, not to destroy the evidence. Right. And because of what? What is this about? And that's how I started to discover all about my father's research, which is about natural products able to recognize cancer cells, wherever they're located, because it's working at the level of the DNA, So it's not gender or organ specific. And specifically prevent those cancer cells to duplicate. Mm-hmm. So what I wanted today to do after my father finally passed away here in the States was to create a non-for-profit organization and associate myself with great universities like Columbia University, Kansas University Medical Center, or Cancer Treatment Centers of America, and have studies, scientific studies, that would prove if this was working or not. Was it really hocus pocus and nonsense and deserve to be destroyed? Or was it something of real value? The past 20 years, all those American independent institutions have confirmed through a number of peer-reviewed papers that it was working on prostate cancer, on ovarian cancer, on pancreatic cancer, on different stages of cancer. It was working alone, it was working in synergy with chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and that's what I am passionate about, as you can
Wow, tell. I can tell. What is your personal, I don't even know if I can ask this question because you're a doctor, so I'm gonna ask it carefully and you answer it any way that you want to. But what did you feel was the result of the research?
Well, the research is a message of hope because there are natural solutions out there that are now backed by the research of several American institutions. Mm-hmm. So people need to know about it. And that's why I wrote a book, Winning the War on Cancer, The Epic Journey Towards a Natural Cure. It's available at Morgan James, Amazon, and also Barnes & Noble and everywhere else. And that's what, you know, we're doing. I also, for a living, because I'm investing my time, my effort, my love, my energy into the foundation. For a living, I am running Maison Beljanski here in New York City, which is a tea room and also a store where we are selling a lot of supplements. For people who have immune issues, cancer issues, they are looking for specific supplements, and that's where we are helping them. And I have to say that during this pandemic, although the store, of course, was closed, there is such a demand for this kind of quality, clean supplements that help boost the immune system, that actually our business has grown. And I am very, very grateful to everybody who has given us the opportunity to spread our message. So thank you for having me.
Oh, you are so welcome. Thank you for being here with us. I want to go over to Brian real quick. You also spoke about how your business has boomed during this time. How did you come up with the idea to pivot your business? I know a lot of people felt stuck. They felt like, okay, I'm in this industry. My industry has completely fell apart. I don't know what to do. Was that an easy process for you? And what was that transition like?
I don't think I really pivoted my business. I always promoted myself through education, just always being willing to share ideas. You know, sometimes in business, if you could teach people how to do things themselves, it doesn't mean they're going to do it themselves. It just means that it proves to them that you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So I really did not pivot. I just continued and just was more proactive about doing webinars to share my knowledge and just doing it. Often in the past, I might've gotten paid to speak, but now it didn't matter. I'm sitting at home. Now I just believe that we all have to band together and help each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes when you put things out there without condition, it just comes back to you.
I think that's beautiful. I think that's the giving spirit. Jim, how about you? What did you see? Because I know people may not necessarily have felt that this is a good time to buy appliances, or maybe they did. Maybe they're doing more cooking and they say, you know what? This old stove is raggedy. Let me go on over here to Danby Appliances and order me something new.
So when the pandemic hit, I thought, oh my God, the sky is falling and all of our sales will evaporate. And for a short period of time, sales did pause. So we did a little pivot and started making ventilators, which at the time everybody said, oh, there's a shortage of ventilators. You see people dying in the halls in Italy, and we can't have that in North America. So we pivoted and we took our staff and started making ventilators. And then the appliance business picked up. Like, mm-hmm. housing starts have never been higher. And the pandemic created a little bit of hoarding. So freezers, we can't make enough freezers. Like, everybody wow. has a freezer. Even refrigerators, we tend to sell second refrigerators. So it's the one that goes in your den, in your basement, in your garage. And people are only wanting to grocery shop every 2 weeks. So they use a secondary appliance. So the appliance business is booming.
Hey, I have a Dan B refrigerator.
Oh, perfect. We tightened our belt even. We let some people go and whatnot. And then we've had to hire back another 100 people or so. And like last week, I think we had 29 people start. Like I wouldn't say it's booming, but it's booming. I'm nervous though, because the debt levels people, the governments are taking on, and I just can't, I don't even understand why the stock market is as high as it is. People don't think there's a pandemic. Maybe I just happen to be one of the very lucky ones in the right place at the right time. So,
well, it seems like people are benefiting. Sylvie mentioned her business has been booming because she went in another direction with her supplements. I think it's how you position yourself and the way people have positioned themselves. They didn't even know it. Like, I had one lady who had just released in early March a book on working virtually. She had no idea the pandemic was coming, but her book comes out in March and it helped different businesses be able to work with their employees virtually. Are your employees still working virtually, Jim? Are they back in the office? What's going on over there at Dan B Appliances?
So most of the office staff are working virtually. We give people the option if they want to come into the office. Some people are coming in 2 days a week, but you can't drive a forklift remotely. I mean, like, we make physical products. The physical stuff still has to get done. And so people are still physically there, but, you know, things like payables and me and stuff like that. It also changes leadership style a lot. Mm-hmm. I can't have lunch in the lunchroom with my staff. I can't walk around and say hi. So I have to over communicate. I live on video. So it's like the way you live. But I do worry medium term that you need that personal touch, I think, to keep people happy and connected. I think we're living on past glory. We worked together in the past, so we can work together in the future. But I do worry about that.
You mentioned again that you having lunch in the lunchroom. Again, that's not really being a typical CEO. Many CEOs tend to sit at their office at their desk and not really interact with people at the company. This seems to be very important for you that you make that personal connection with everyone.
Totally. That's how I learn a lot from mm-hmm. real people who are doing real work. And mm-hmm. it's kind of weird right now. If I'm working at home and if I call someone who's lower in the organization, they're, oh no, the CEO called. This is, if I sit down with you in the lunchroom, it's like, oh, Jim's just having his lunch, just like I'm having my lunch. And then something will come up and say, oh, you know, we're having problems unloading these containers or whatever. Oh, well, what's the problem on unloading containers? Well, maybe we can figure out this or that. So I learned so much from the staff and walking around. And the other thing is, Sharifa, I'm just a regular guy. And I just don't believe in ivory towers. I actually think I have failed if I'm too scary or too much in an ivory tower. And, I started from the trunk of my car. So I did everything from cleaning the washrooms to you name it, doing the banking to everything. And so, but I think we have a world where people think they're special, and I don't think they're that special. We're all.
We're all special, Jim. Each and every one of them.
That's a better way of putting it. We're all special. I was camping on the weekend and mm-hmm. I sat out and looked at the stars. And I'm telling you, you go look at the stars. And I live in a city, so when I look at the stars, I see mostly streetlights. But when I was camping, it just makes you realize how insignificant we are. And any of our problems are pretty small compared to the others. Anyone who's watching now, listening now, their problems are tiny compared to other people.
Yes, I agree. Lynn, I want to go ahead and go back to you real quick. What have you seen for yourself personally and for your business? Are you one of those people who have went in a different direction? Are you one of those people who said, oh, this was a great time for me to pivot? What happened personally for you?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, we launched in February, and then it was like, okay, we're on lockdown. Now, the good thing for us is we're a DTC business. So we had built a strong e-commerce machine. We're on Shopify. I've got all my plugins. I've got
before
my-
Before you go too much farther, didn't mean to interrupt, but you know, for our viewers who don't, who do not know what a DTC business is.
Okay, that is a direct-to-consumer business, which basically means we sell primarily online. So we're also on Amazon. So, you know, the challenges in beauty, I really have this belief that you can't just be DTC, that people want to see and touch and feel and smell your products. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the experience. So when we launched, we also had launched with a couple of retail stores. We have one in LA called Atherton. That's wonderful. They're a beauty, indie beauty boutique. We had one in DC and we had been talking to several salons. Well, obviously the salon situation was immediately impacted. Mm-hmm. So that all went on pause. So we basically just refocused on digital acquisition, building our customer base and creating content, which you got to do, as you know, I mean, you're in this business. It's an ongoing 24/7 kind of thing. You're always churning out, you know, relevant content. So we looked at our content calendar and we said, okay, what do people care about now? Well, they want to know things like how to look good on video, you know, how to get salon hair care at home, you know, DIY. Well,
how do you look good on video? What are some tips and strategies?
Don't use me as the, barometer for looking good on video, because I actually don't even listen to my own advice. No, but lighting and angle have a lot to do with it. So that is definitely a big part of the trick. But we wrote a blog post on it. You can take a look at it. So we really focused in on content that we thought was going to be you know, interesting. And I said earlier, but like clean beauty, meaning no sulfates, parabens, phthalates, no bad toxins, which unfortunately in the US, 90% of hair care has bad shit in it. Mm-hmm. Toxins in it. So, you know, we just decided to really lean into that aspect as well, since, you know, the health piece is becoming more and more important. I think people are becoming more educated about what's in their products, not just in beauty, but in everything, right? In food and cleaning products. They look at the supply chain of where things are made. People want to know that things are ethically sourced. You know, there's just a lot that goes into it. So, you know, we're lucky in the sense that I guess we are on trend for being a COVID positive brand. You know,
the products that you have, that you offer.
So we have a shampoo, a conditioner, a shine serum, and a styling cream. Those are our four debut products. We're working on some additional things in the pipeline right now, which are exciting, but that's what we've launched with. Our products are gender neutral. So Jim, I know your hair's getting a little long. If you want a little hydration there, you know, men love our products. So one of the things I did though, and this is maybe another tip, is, you know, I'm very much about helping other founders and sort of leading with a generous spirit, because I really believe that when you give, it will come back. And we started doing some partnerships with several other female founded brands, small brands that were, you know, kind of all of us in the same boat. And that's been awesome. Mm-hmm. Because we've really been able to help each other and sort of boost each other up. And, you know, when we write a blog post, I'll mention other brands and vice versa. We do a bunch of stuff on social together. We do giveaways on, you know, that's been a little bit of the silver lining throughout this.
Is I'm not, not sure. Alone.
Yeah, oh. We're not alone. And I don't think that would have happened as organically, you know, on its own. So I now have like a really nice network of other cool brands that, that I'm just, it's just been, that's been a sort of kind of gratifying piece of everything.
I think that's wonderful. I think that's definitely wonderful working together. I want to go over to Sylvie real quick. One of the things, based on what Lynn was saying, is that, thank you. One of the things that Lynn was saying is the whole idea of having products that are good for you, holistic, organic. You know, I would say in the last decade or so, we saw more of a push mainly because of like cancer. We were really, everyone was so afraid of cancer. You know, watch the Aaron Brockovich movie. You watch baby powder gives you cancer. There's a fear that just about anything can give you cancer. So when we look for our products, we're very careful about the items that we use. Like Lynn said, the shampoo. Have you seen that as well in your research, Sylvie?
Oh, absolutely. There is definitely a link between environmental pollution and disease, not just cancer. So education about what makes us sick is absolutely paramount. And that's one of the themes that I believe has make us reputable, because we take that very, very seriously. And we are focused for years now on products that help detoxify, promote the immune system, and fighting cancer is just, you know, at the very end of it, if the other things have not worked before that. But it's all about education and taking the problem as early as possible. So absolutely, I mean, clean products is absolutely paramount of this approach. And that's indeed what people want to hear about nowadays. Mm-hmm. They understand that, you know, we have been lied upon for now decades, and we have to take back our health in our own hands and learn more, because nobody is going to disclose everything in the big companies.
Yes, they're not going to disclose all the ingredients, what's in these products. And some of these products or some of the ingredients can cause disease and illness. And one of the things that I find very interesting now, when I watch television or I watch the videos, I'll see companies say, oh, we have made sure now that all of our employees wash their hands and that our facilities are clean. I'm like, but weren't they supposed to be like washing their hands and cleaning this whole time? You know, but it's that they make it every little note. You go into a restaurant and it said all these things. I'm like, but it's 2020. Like, why are we just now getting here? I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm the only.
Absolutely. Washing your hands has been something for employees, has been mandatory for years. There is nothing new here, and facilities are supposed to be cleaned all the time. It's almost shocking that people are finally realizing that, but better late than never.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think sometimes, again, it goes back to the messaging. People just want to make their customers or their potential customers feel safe, feel like, okay, we've done everything that we can do. We at least stated that it's okay for you to come back in. Brian, what do you see as far as the trends in the wedding industry as people return back?
Well, one of the things that is extremely important is caution. You know, there's two different issues. One is the legality of actually having the amount of people at a particular wedding in different states. Mm-hmm. But the other one is the impact that COVID has had on the psyches of people, mm-hmm. and them actually feeling safe to go to a wedding. Right. So I really believe in, you know, I'm involved with a large group called the Venue Association, and I'm trying to encourage them being a mindfulness on how they can convey to their clients and their guests that we're going to do whatever we can to keep you safe. I'm also involved with a new app called Venue X. And one of the biggest, this is an app for different venues. And one of their aspects of the app is to allow for the data entry of contact tracing. Because that's one of the key things that will allow people to receptions to be not be part of the problem, mm-hmm. because gatherings is really where the big challenge is going to be, mm-hmm. in fighting the spread of the disease. So them having that as part of the app is a real good thing. And in general,
sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I just doing that today, I guess. But Brian, did you see that it's a viral video about a lady in Hawaii who caught some people having this illegal wedding on the beach? Did you see it? Did anybody see it? It was kind of interesting. But it was a viral video, and this lady comes, like, she literally sees them having a wedding on the beach, and she walks up to them in the middle of the wedding. She's like, that's illegal. You know you can't have weddings here. You have to go. And then they're like, well, that's my house. And she was like, no, you rented it. I already know the owners. And she just totally messed up their wedding because they had been having a legal wedding on the beach, which was true. But hey, it's their wedding. And then there's like a mandate now where you cannot, visitors or non-residents cannot rent property in Hawaii. So they had illegally rented this house for this illegal wedding on the beach. But for her to come up with the camera and then upload it and make it viral to embarrass these people, I kind of felt bad because they just wanted to be in love, Brian. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I didn't see that. But in reality, there's a tremendous responsibility that venues have to understand. And as much as I want my clients and all the venues in the country to prosper and get their business back, and of course that's what I do, if there's a outbreak from a particular wedding in a particular state, the whole wedding industry is going to be shut down in that state. So there just has to be a real care and a real mindfulness, and hopefully, you know, sometime in the near future, a vaccine that will really help eradicate this.
Are you seeing people booking weddings for 2021?
Yes, yes. There's that absolutely. This, I mean, the power of couples wanting to get married is, that's not going to go away. I mean, this industry is going to get back to where it was eventually, and there's a lot of businesses are getting calls from clients, emails from clients that are planning future weddings for sure. And they're not, and they don't want to hear about COVID. They're zoned in that by the time that they get married, things are going to be the way they always were.
I think that's wonderful. I think it's great. I think we will go back to the way, you know, we will go back to weddings, definitely, for sure. I want to go over to you, Jim. I want to talk about leadership. What are some of the examples that you can give, or what do you think makes for a good leader, Jim?
And you ask that when you have like 12 minutes left on the show? That's not a fair question.
But you know what, Jim? I wanted to bring this because it was something that you touched on the last show. And I'm like, okay, I want to see if I can pull that back out of Jim, because you have magic. You have so much personality because you take the time to discuss issues that in my opinion, not a lot of other CEOs would.
So leadership is a very complex thing. I believe in servant leader, and that is my job is to help my people do as well as they can do. So that it's the helper leader. That's one thing. I believe in lead by example, where I can lead by example, but there's some things I can't lead by example because I simply don't have the skill or ability to do it. I also believe that leaders should take the brunt. So, I mean, a simple example, we did a pay cut of all the senior people in the company when COVID hit because we were worried about the financial situation. Now, fortunately, we've been able to restore all that, but it's the senior people that take it, not the junior people. Leadership right now in COVID is a lot about communication because the communication style had to change. It can't be in person. It's now done on video. It's now done on email. So upping that. And people also have an underlying stress because of what's going on. So, and people are whole people. You're not just who you are at work. Your home, your whole life is connected, and leaders need to be very aware of that. So, right now you're leading people whose lives have changed just because of social distancing. And sometimes it's because of work at home, and in the worst case, because someone actually has been touched with COVID. But largely what we're dealing with in leadership is the effects of COVID, not actual COVID. So fortunately, no one in my company has yet had COVID, and I haven't lost friends to COVID, but it's just the overlying thing that you can't go out with anyone, can't get your hair cut.
I like your hair like that. I'm waiting for it to grow longer so you can put it in a ponytail. Then we're gonna have we're gonna have hippie Jim.
Oh, you're perfect, perfect. Yeah, remember my youth, you see.
Sylvie, I want to go over to you in a for a moment. I wanted to talk to Jim about leadership, but one of the things that I would love to see in your industry when I talk about nonprofits is more people coming out there and being vocal about some of the chemicals, some of the products, some of the things that we're using. I think sometimes we look at a particular company, we look at specifically what they're doing as opposed to focusing on what we can do to understand some of the chemicals that are included. What do you see are ways that we can get out the message that we have to be more aware of the things that we're putting into our body?
That's a, you know, part of the conferences that I've all been giving at trade shows and for the past several years. At Maison Belchanski also, we have been hosting events on a regular basis until COVID. I mean, we were hosting Healthy Tuesdays events on various topics, all related to holistic health on a monthly basis. And now we are going to continue to do that because there is a real demand, but it's just going to be virtual. I would say that going virtual actually allows us to not to be confined into walls. And we are going to see if we are able to touch an even bigger audience by doing so.
Virtual does allow us to touch it even. Do you use content and videos like Lynn was saying? Do you create videos to put out that message?
Yes, that's one of the things I do love. Videos. I have created two long videos, one about my father's legacy, kind of 40 minutes video, and it's about his life and his discoveries. And yes, I found that a powerful way to put the message out there because people see. And when they see, it's like a movie, they relate to it much more than when they read scientific papers.
So when your parents were arrested, did they actually go to jail?
For a short time. And then there were, you know, really spending a trial date that never happened. They never gave my father his day in court. And my father passed away after 2 years without ever having his day in court, a set. And that's why I took the case to the European Court of Human Rights, because you cannot let a defendant die at home waiting for a day in court that never comes. And we won an unanimous decision, Belchanski against France.
Woo! Congratulations. Is there going to be a movie about that?
I hope so. I would love it to see.
Something tells me if it's going to happen, you're going to be the one that have to make it happen. No,
that's a big thing.
I think it would be good. I don't know. Maybe a book. Maybe a book will be a little bit easier. I don't know. But I think that's amazing. I think it's very interesting. And I love the dynamic in that you did this for your father. You know, you saw what was being done to him, felt it was unfair, and then said, you know what, I have to do something about it. There were so many people who would have just cried and left it alone. But you took it in your hands and took another step to clear your father's name.
Yes, clear his father's name, but also it was the unfairness of the situation that really make me react. And the fact that, you know, you cannot suppress something that helps thousands of people around the world. This is insane. This is kind of crime against humanity. If something works, you have to make that available and let people choose if they want to access it or not. And, but they have the right to make that decision for themselves.
I think that's beautiful. I think that's wonderful. And I think often sometimes it comes down to money. That's just my belief that there's no money in the cure. It, you know, a lot of people benefit from people being ill, people being sick, people requiring medicine. But that's a whole nother show, a whole nother tangent that I can go into, just me getting on my personal soapbox. But we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives. You are still as important as everyone else. I want to go ahead and allow Brian to have his thoughts first.
Well, first of all, I've really enjoyed the opportunity to speak and be part of this wonderful conversation. And, you know, I have, you know, my website is my name, brianlawrence.com, Brian with an I, Lawrence with a W. And I do a lot of work around the wedding and event industry and beyond. I've owned businesses my entire life, so I have an entrepreneurial spirit and a really good instinct and creativity. So I'm open.
I love it. Thank you for being here, Brian. Lynn, what do you want people to take away from your appearance?
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was quite interesting. I think I just would encourage people to educate themselves about their health and about, you know, clean beauty and what that's all about. And if you want to learn more about my brand, you can go to lovemasumi.com or check out all our social handles. We're on everything at Love Masumi Hair is our social channel. Or I'm at Lynn Powered. I think it's about, you know, trying to be as healthy as you can under the circumstances.
I love it. Lynn Powered, the power of Lynn. That sounds almost like a math problem. The power of Lynn. It's unlimited equals unlimited. E equals M. I'm sorry, I was distracted. Sylvie, what do you want people to take away from your appearance?
Well, if you are interested by my story and by this research and by those natural compounds that can make a difference, here's my book, okay? And my name is Sylvie Belcherski, and you can have more information about the research if you go to the belcherski.org website and also Maison Belcherski to learn more about what we are doing. And you won't regret it. The book has received a lot of awards because it's kind of, it reads like a novel, and it gives you all the scientific information that you need to take away.
I love it. Winning the war on cancer. I know a lot of people are suffering from that and believe that there is no hope. Definitely want to pick up a copy of your book. It's available. Where is it available?
It's available everywhere. It was published by Morgan James. You can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, everywhere they are selling books. And of course, Maison Belcherski, the Belcherski Foundation.
Definitely want to check it out. Jim, what do you have for us?
Well, it seems pretty insignificant when we're curing cancer. And like, I'm going to say, well, you need to buy more Danby bar fridges. But if anyone wants
Does it have the same weight? I don't know.
Not quite. But if anyone wants to connect with me, the best way is probably on LinkedIn. It's Jim Estill. I have a little test. If someone wants to get a hold of me and they can't figure it out using Google, then they don't deserve to get a hold of me. So that's how I do it. And thank you very much, Sharifa. You're very, very interesting how diversified the show is with like cancer to freezers and wedding planning and marketing. It's really interesting how you tie together completely disparate topics. Very well done.
Thank you. I received that and I take that. But you know what I found since I launched the show on the 30th of March, no matter how different people are, there are still commonalities. I had one show in particular that I was a little worried about. I had a lady who her focus was mental health and she had mental illness. And that was her main thing. She talked about people with mental illness and that was her thing. And then I had another lady who was a business owner and she seems very corporate, that's the word I'm going to use. And I didn't know if there would be a good interaction between the two. And then all of a sudden, the corporate lady just started talking about, well, young, my cousin, she's bipolar and she's schizophrenic and I don't know how to deal with this. And then the mental ill lady was like, it's hard for the families. And I'm just sitting back like they're having their own session. So I just think that if we come together, we find more in common than what we do that's different. So I love the show. I love meeting new people. I thank you for being here, Jim. I want to thank everyone for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching the show in the archives. But don't just watch the show, support the show, support our guests. All of their information is in the Facebook post. Please visit their websites. Please follow them on social media. And when you do, when you send them that first inbox message, tweet, email, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. And if you are interested in being a guest, please visit the website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Bye-bye.